wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
We are dealing with children becoming victims of internet predators.
I can still remember him saying, I've been thinking about you all day, and I've been thinking about doing this.
An innocent victim and a determined undercover cop expose dark secrets.
He began asking about my preteen children.
He was very explicit about what he wanted to do.
He was playing a game, and it ended up painting him into a corner that he could not escape.
Nobody really wants to believe that that kind of evil actually exists.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own, America's leading journal, Vanity Fair, investigates A Crime of Shadows by Mark Bouton. Exclusive Connecticut suburb, where many wealthy New Yorkers have settled with their families.
It's a town that strives for a lot of perfection, and a lot of it is superficial. The other side of that is it's a town that has a lot of very successful people there, a lot of Wall Street stars that I think demands a lot of people.
Katie Tarbox feels the constant pressure to measure up. So she's thrilled when she discovers the anonymity of online chat rooms.
I think really what was at play was my vulnerability, my being naive, my being insecure. I questioned myself, you know, am I beautiful enough? Do I fit in? I certainly struggled with that greatly. And I didn't see myself fitting in at all with this town that could just pluck out extras for the Stepford Wives remake movie, and I was, you know, I really felt like I was the antithesis of that.
As much as Katie's a beautiful person, she wasn't very comfortable with the way she looked, and she talked a lot about this. Going on the internet meant she lived in a mirrorless universe where she didn't have to deal with her appearance.
I have no interest to be judged on my physical appearance. So, of course, on the internet, where the first thing that you're being judged for is what you say, your mind. That was very empowering for me. One day, you know, I was in a chat room, and I got a response back from a 23-year-old from California. And we started talking.
Before long, Katie is spending her evenings chatting online with Mark, who uses the handle Valley Guy.
He told me he was a graduate of the University of Pennsylvania. He'd gotten out to California and he was a lawyer. He asked me about my interest. I was a nationally ranked swimmer. And at the time I was really getting into piano, and I was playing a lot of Mozart. I'd found somebody that wanted to talk about Mozart. I felt like there was some connection there. You don't go into it with any expectations of where is this going to go. But, you know, after a couple of months, this was a person that I really confided in.
Soon after they first connect, Mark pushes their relationship to a new level.
It's after 1 o'clock in the morning, and she basically gets a call. Is woken up from the deep of sleep by this fellow who she gave a phone number to.
The first time I spoke to him, I certainly was excited.
One of the things that Katie says is that in addition to being put out by him calling her at this late hour, she was also flattered.
I was intoxicated by the attention and what it was doing for my confidence and self-esteem at that point. He's becoming the first person that I turn to. He's becoming the person that really cares about my well-being and my interest, and he's there for me.
As their relationship deepens, Mark makes it very clear that he's falling for Katie, and he wants more.
He just threw it out there one day that he would like to come and he would like to meet me, and that he'd be willing to fly wherever.
Katie mentions to Mark that she'll soon be heading to Texas for a national swimming competition.
Well, this is Mark's golden moment because he's now able to tell her, I can be there too. I can meet you there. We can get together and make this thing happen.
I told him the hotel I was staying at, and we made a plan that we would connect when I got there. I don't even know what I envisioned. So I flew down to Dallas, Texas, and I knew full well that I was going to be meeting him. And I thought he was going to call my hotel room.
So she's expecting when she comes back from her swim that she's going to make contact with Mark. She thinks Mark will be there and be ready to talk to her, and he's not.
And I thought, well, maybe he's not coming.
But after 9 o'clock that evening, Katie's phone rings.
She's in the bed. She picks up the phone and talks to him, and she asks him, you know, where were you? And he explains, well, my flight was delayed. So I'm sorry I'm late, but I really need to see you now.
Excited to meet the man she's thought so much about, Katie heads to Mark's room. She knocks on the door, and when it opens, she finds herself face to face, not with a young man just out of college, but with someone her father's age.
I am, like, so uncomfortable at this moment. It's just really hit me that this is an adult. I mean, I couldn't have said, oh, he's 35 or 50. It's just, he's older.
Katie has just celebrated her 14th birthday.
The hardest memory for me out of all of this is knowing that I, you know, as I was walking to the elevator, going to press the button to go down to his hotel room, I never thought once that I was willingly putting myself into such a dangerous situation, and no part of that fear or danger ever went across my mind.
As a father, it's a fear that Vanity Fair contributing editor Mark Bowden can understand. But as a journalist, when he begins investigating the dark world of online predators in 2009, Bowden discovers a threat that is poorly understood, but widely feared.
There grew a kind of hysteria about the potential for child predation online. And there were a number of studies that were done. One of them, funded by the Justice Department, concluded that one in every seven children had been approached by a sexual predator online, and that there were 50,000 or more dangerous sexual predators online.
The statistics are alarming, but is the threat to young children as dire as the numbers suggest? To understand what motivates internet predators, Bowden sets out to find one. His search leads him to Delaware County, Pennsylvania.
Well, on its face, it's the story of Jay, a young man living in the suburbs of Philadelphia. Jay would go online primarily to engage in erotic conversation with women. That was his sexual outlet. He did all this sort of furtively when his wife wasn't home and when his wife is asleep upstairs.
One fall evening in 2005, Jay is chatting online when he comes upon an alluring prospect, a woman who goes by the handle Heather's Cutie Pies. Jay uses the screen name Parafling. Parafling asks for more information about Heather's Cutie Pies, a mother with two children.
He became obsessed with this woman who called herself Heather's Cutie Pies.
But Heather's Cutie Pies is, in fact, Michelle Deary, an undercover detective for Delaware County. She has no children. Deary works for a nationwide unit known as the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force.
I was hired to do specifically internet crimes. I wanted to work with kids, but I wasn't sure in what arena that would be. This was presented to me, and it, you know, struck me as very, very interesting and new.
Over the past 10 years, Deary has become an expert at connecting with potential online predators.
He began asking about my children, my preteen children, and whether they had engaged in any sexual acts yet, how he would like to perform sexual acts with them.
Detective Deary is sure she's found a potentially dangerous predator. Now comes the hard part. How does she expose him and take him out of circulation? Michelle Deary is an undercover detective. Her beat is the internet. Her job, protecting children from online predators.
I remember first communicating with individuals. They were freely just emailing me child pornography. I think the first time I saw those pictures, I was heartbroken.
Today, in 2015, every 12-year-old has a cell phone. Many of them have smartphones with internet access readily available, and they can get access to the whole world through the internet.
We are dealing with internet solicitation, with children becoming victims of internet predators on a daily basis. So we're getting thousands and thousands of tips in a given year. It's very prevalent, and it's a real concern as we sit here today.
It's these concerns that drive Detective Deary into lurid chat rooms, looking for people like Jay.
In this particular case, I was contacted by him, and he was very graphic from the very, very beginning on what sexual acts he wanted to perform with my preteen children. Part of having that conversation is making it seem like that's perfectly okay.
Jay has no idea that he's talking to an undercover cop.
It's not a crime to have fantasies. Being a pedophile in itself is not a crime. It's only acting upon that desire.
Now, if a person is willing to engage in the sexual fantasy, does that mean that they are more likely to engage in criminal behavior in the real world? I'm sure that Michelle Deary believes that it does.
It is one thing to have what we call unsavory fantasy, but some individuals start those conversations of it being a fantasy, and then having the dialogue online becomes not enough.
Now, Deary must establish whether Jay is just indulging a perverted fantasy, or if he's ready to engage in a very real criminal act.
In my profile, I said I was in Pennsylvania. He seemed familiar with where I was. And he talked very early on about meeting. He expressed over and over again wanting to meet.
Over the next month, Deary and Jay continue their online dance, and the perverse conversation steadily escalates. Deary has spent almost 2 months reeling Jay in. But if she can't get him to agree to meet with the intention of committing a crime, her efforts could be wasted.
Her problem is that every time she tries to arrange an assignation, he insists upon meeting just with her. And she needs for him to show criminal intent, which is to have sex with children. So if you review, as I did, their dialogue over months, she's playing with a fish on a line. So he very quickly realizes that if he's ever going to realize this fantasy of meeting this woman in the real world, he's got to play along with what interests her. And what interests her is his interest in the girls.
5 weeks after their first contact, Jay agrees to meet Deary at a local fast food restaurant.
He made the suggestion that he meet the mother and the two girls at a particular time. And I gave him the location, which was close to where I lived.
Then he shares one last prophetic thought.
He said, I had a dream last night. I came and you were the cops, and I had to kill myself because I wasn't going to jail.
Is Jay on to Detective Deary? Or will he risk it all and show up for their salacious rendezvous? Over a period of 6 weeks, undercover detective Michelle Deary flirts with Jay in an online chat room. When he asks to have sex with her imaginary preteen daughters, Deary is sure she's found a real sexual predator. And now, she's ready to take him down.
It's a fascinating story. What you get into is this sordid, salacious courtship, actually, online, where these two people are trying to arrive at an agreement. To meet and have sex.
A month after their first contact, Jay agrees to meet Deary at a local fast food restaurant. The plan? He'll play with her first, and then she'll introduce him to her daughters.
One unmarked unit was at the exit from the Blue Route to McDade Boulevard. That unit's job was to look for the vehicle that we were looking for.
Jay got himself all primped up and dressed up and stopped at a drugstore and bought a pack of condoms and had a bag full of sadomasochistic toys and drove to the fast food restaurant.
I had an undercover vehicle following him from that exit. I've had 5 or 6 units in this whole area, one back here, pretty much covering the entrances and exits.
When he pulled into the parking lot and a car pulled up and blocked him from behind, his first instinct was some idiot driver just almost hit me.
The vehicles surround him, and obviously the concept is so that he can't go anywhere. We then direct him out of the vehicle, and he's placed in handcuffs and placed in the back of a marked patrol unit.
Jay was just horrified when he was arrested, and I think understood immediately how bad it looked.
I think I'm always just astounded that they show up. I'm astounded that they take that step towards, you know, committing the crime.
He's humiliated, he's ashamed, he's trying desperately to explain himself. And of course, no one is terribly interested in his rationalizations.
I think their whole world comes flashing before their eyes and everything's falling apart.
To make her case, Deary only needs Jay to demonstrate by his actions that he intends to commit a crime.
I have no reason to believe that that's not what he intended to do. He bought condoms, some sex toys. that stuff to me also goes along with the intent to commit the crime.
The fact that he had purchased condoms and the condoms came in a 3-pack became evidence against him, because if he was only going to have sex with her, why did he buy 3 condoms? Michelle would say, to have sex with me and with my 2 daughters. He would say they only come in 3-packs.
I firmly believe that if Michelle had been a real mother with real children, that he would have had sex with those children.
Believe me, you know, it took me, it took a strong stomach for me to look past the nature of the fantasy dialogue. But the only children in this whole discussion were fictions, were inventions of Michelle Deary. He was playing a game, I believe, and it ended up painting him into a corner that he could not escape.
Jay is charged with criminal attempt of involuntary deviant sexual intercourse. He insists that he would never engage in any sexual activity with children.
Most, if not all, of these individuals are married, have children, have good jobs, have so much to lose.
I was surprised when I met Jay. He seems like the most normal person you'd ever meet. He was a sort of stoop-shouldered, pot-bellied, middle-aged guy, and very mild in his demeanor. He's a guy who repairs copy machines for a living. Has a very unhappy marriage, no sex life, except for a fantasy one on the internet. He says, I never intended to have sex with a child. He says, those things I said on the internet, I said them in the realm of fantasy only because I was trying to keep this woman interested in me.
He was very explicit about what he wanted to do. And the way he described the sexual acts, that indicated to us that he had put a lot of thought into this.
I would have liked them to have really put him to the test, instead of just arresting him when he showed up, to send him in to have sex with the girls to see if he would have gone or not.
If he had gone with her to meet with those little girls, that would have, it seems to me, been fairly convincing evidence that he was willing, if not interested, in having sex with these children.
18 months later, Jay accepts a plea bargain rather than risk going to trial. 1 year in prison and 10 years on the sex offender registry. Jay claims he never intended to follow through with his fantasy, but many others do. 9 years earlier in Dallas, Texas, a man who calls himself Mark is determined to meet with a very real 14-year-old girl. Katie Tarbox and her online friend Mark have been corresponding every night for months. Now, Katie and her high school swim team are in Dallas for a national meet, with her mother as a chaperone. And Katie and Mark have secretly made plans to meet each other at her hotel.
She was ready to see him, and she wanted to see him. Mark calls her on the phone, and he says, I really need to see you now. She didn't even bother to get dressed. All she did was tell her roommate, I've got a friend to meet downstairs, and I'll see you later.
I went down in my pajamas because I just thought, I'll say hello to him. And then I'll come back up and I'll see him tomorrow or whatever. So I knocked on the door and he opened it up, and it was just like this, whoa, he's older. He's just older. Right from the moment he opened the door, I felt very uncomfortable. I started to turn more in just kind of like a shocked mode. And I wasn't myself. I think that I felt this obligation. He's flown all the way from California to Dallas, and so there was a part of me that's like, I don't have the confidence to say how wrong this is.
As uncomfortable as she is, Katie enters Mark's room.
He had asked me to come sit on the sofa. And it's just like, it doesn't feel like one of our phone conversations. He knows, he can sense that I'm uncomfortable. So he pulls out my palm and starts like stroking my hand, and this is all so foreign to me. I have never been touched by, you know, anyone of the opposite sex other than, you know, my father or my grandfather giving me hugs. And I can still remember him looking away and saying, you know, Katie, I've been thinking about you all day, and I've been thinking about doing this.
Katie Tarbox is in a Dallas hotel room with a man she met online. She has just turned 14. He is 41.
He's very small in stature. And he's not threatening. And I think, of course, I mean, I'm not going to deny that I had feelings for him.
She wants to believe that there's something here, there's something serious here.
I can still remember him looking away and saying, you know, Katie, I've been thinking about you all day, and I've been thinking about doing this.
He then proceeds to jump on her and put his hands on her breasts and then kiss her and pushes his tongue in her mouth. His hands go from her breast to her groin. He tries to get under her pajama bottom, and she starts to resist. But he's become a man possessed at this point. So at this moment, Katie realizes, I've made a huge mistake, and she freezes.
When you'd get educational classes in school through the DARE program, I would always think to myself, why doesn't the girl run away? Why doesn't she, you know, fight back? And I just became completely numb and passive and just sat there as he continued on.
At that very moment, Katie's mother goes to say goodnight to her and discovers that Katie isn't in her room.
She'd gone out and bought food for the team, and when she came back and found me missing, she started asking questions. And I had told a friend where I was going.
Katie's mother immediately calls hotel security.
What happens next is there's a heavy rap on the door. And somebody yells, is Katie Tarbox in there? And he says no. He denies that she's there.
He didn't want to open up the door and starts instructing me to be quiet. And I haven't really figured out how wrong this is. I am just so embarrassed. And I realize, like, what have I gotten myself into?
And there's a man's voice saying, I have Katie's mother here, and she's not leaving until we check the room. So you'll have to let us in.
He knows there's no way out. He eventually opens up the door. And my mother is just, I can see she's just so visibly upset. I had never given my mother a reason not to be extraordinarily proud of me. And so I knew this was a huge disappointment for her, and I was embarrassed for that.
There's Katie's mother, and there's the hotel detectives. And she says, Mom, nothing happened.
Hotel security alerts the Dallas police. and they start to question Mark. He maintains that he did not assault Katie Tarbox, that all they did was talk.
The police officer came back to me and said, this is a pedophile. I didn't even know what that word meant. This is, you know, especially in the world I was living in. And then they say to me, you know, miss, we've been talking to him for about 5 minutes, and you've been talking to him for 6 months. And his name isn't Mark, but it was really Frank. He was 41. And that all hit home very powerfully for me because I just thought, who the hell had I been talking to this whole time?
Katie is confused and feels betrayed, but she still doesn't tell the police what Mark really did.
I didn't want this to continue. I just wanted to pretend like it didn't happen. I thought if I kept quiet, it goes away. There's nothing to investigate.
In a strange way, she still has feelings for him. The fact is that this guy had all the right things to say. He knew exactly how to talk to Katie.
The technique that we see most often, almost by necessity, with acquaintance molesters is this grooming process.
Of course, there's a reason he's talking to her the way he's talking to her, because he's got a script. He knows exactly what he needs to say to bring her in.
Most people today call it grooming. I've been talking about it since the early 1980s. I call it seduction.
His initial conversation wasn't, you know, let's play sex games with each other. It was very low-key. It was very much about, what's it like growing up for you? What music do you like?
What these offenders do, they're willing to wait as the trial goes through this process. And the whole purpose of this process is so that you don't have to hold a knife to her throat and force her to do this against her will. You're grooming her, seducing her. And the purpose of all of this is to make her what I call compliant.
Ken Lanning created the profile of the compliant victim when he was at the FBI.
Once he gets the child to do one thing that the child knows they weren't supposed to do, he's got him. That's what I call say no, yell and tell guilt. Because now you're ashamed and embarrassed that you didn't do what you're supposed to do.
Even when she is questioned over and over about what happened in the hotel room that night, Katie refuses to tell anyone that she was assaulted. With no evidence of a crime, police are forced to release the man she knew as Mark, and he returns home to California.
Katie holds on to the story that nothing happened. She's trying to help Mark avoid justice because she feels guilty for what's gone on. She saw herself as part of a relationship that had by this point gone really bad, but still a relationship that she had some responsibility in.
You know, this is a pretty common thing that a victim changes their story. And it's true in my case. I needed a couple of days to come to terms with this was an adult who had taken advantage of a child.
At some point after 4 days, she basically realizes, I've got to tell my mother the truth.
I just thought if he could do this to me, he could do this to anyone else.
How dangerous a predator is the man Katie knows as Mark? Is it possible that Katie isn't his first or his last victim? Four days earlier, in a Dallas hotel room, a 41-year-old man sexually assaulted Katie Tarbox, an eighth grader from New Canaan, Connecticut. She lies to everyone about the attack. But now, Katie decides to share her secret.
I told my mom, and she said to me, you know, you have to be very sure. You have to be very sure because this is going to make such a huge impact in his life. And ours, too.
When Katie insists that now she's telling the truth, her mother contacts Dallas police.
And at that point, they asked us, would we want to press charges against him? And we decided we would.
In 1996, internet predators are a new class of criminal. This case is uncharted territory for the legal system.
Sexual assault is nothing new. Sexual assaults on minors, nothing new. But sexual assault through the internet? What is this?
No person has ever been charged and convicted of soliciting a minor for sex online.
So the prosecutor in this case had put together that this is a case that he could apply the 1996 Communications Decency Act.
President Clinton signed the Communications Decency Act as part of the telecommunications law in February.
The Communications Decency Act is a controversial law originally designed to regulate pornography on the internet. But because Katie has been lured to her sexual assault using the internet, her lawyer sees an opportunity to break new legal ground.
Most prosecutors are not willing to take these cases to court when it's he said, she said. But they were interested and could see that the internet could potentially give rise to a lot of perpetrators. But this was very difficult because there was never a case in court that had tested that.
It takes 2 years, but the daring legal strategy finally pays off. Rather than risk going to trial, Frank Kupferwich pleads guilty to using the internet to lure a minor into an illegal sex act. And for the first time, Katie learns who her online friend really is.
I knew he was from Pennsylvania and he'd gotten out to California and he was a lawyer. He does have a law degree from USC. He was like in some sort of financial world at the time. That was really all I could piece together.
Meanwhile, police identify three other alleged victims, but no formal charges are ever filed in those assaults.
I know there were other victims who were never willing to go forward that he was never prosecuted for. But I have tremendous sympathy for his other victims because I know just how hard of a walk that is in life.
Kupferwich is sentenced to 18 months in prison, 3 years probation, and he must register as a sex offender for the rest of his life.
Frank Kupferwich spends less time in prison than she does dealing with the reality of her situation.
I was being blamed, I was being victimized, I was being called a Lolita.
She had friends that were no longer talking to her. One of her best friends' mother calls her mother to say, I don't think my daughter should be with Katie anymore. I think Katie is a bad influence on my daughter.
I mean, I had to leave my high school because I needed to get a fresh start. I think if somebody had said to me, you know, you're going to spend this many years, you're going to sacrifice this much of your life, and it's going to cause this much heartache, I don't know that I could have gone through.
So ultimately, she finds a place where she can be herself again. She finds a boarding school in New Hampshire where she can be far away from all the stuff that had followed her.
Cases like Katie's trigger a public panic about internet predators and heated debate about how serious a threat they really pose.
New internet-based danger for children.
Government agents posed as teens made 1,400 arrests since 1996. Parents should regard their home computer as an open doorway to the house, one that predators are waiting to use for access to America's children.
Parents are more concerned than ever about the dangers their children face online. But experts disagree about the real hazards.
Nobody really wants to believe that that kind of evil actually exists. These individuals are very graphic, talking about sexual intercourse, oral sex, and anything that you can imagine.
And I think that's hard for people to really wrap their brain around.
I think that there are many, many more people who are content to live out their sexual fantasies online than there are people who would take the very serious next step of approaching a child in the real world and molesting them.
The internet has created these fantasy possibilities. I mean, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that the more they can actively fantasize about it, the less likely they're actually to do something about it. On the other hand, the more people who are doing it, the more likely that someone's going to cross the line.
I've been dealing with this for over 40 years. And there's the paranoia of it. They're everywhere. You can't let your kids out. That's kind of what's sometimes called the witch hunt. I like to believe there's a balance between denial and paranoia.
But that debate matters little to those who have been victimized.
Girls from New Canaan, Connecticut, who go on to the Ivy League, are not supposed to become victims of sexual assault. If I could do this all over again, of course, I would have wanted to live a normal teenage life. I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.